T.D. Jakes. I mean, you really can't talk about influential figures today and not bring him up. He's everywhere, right? Televised sermons, all those best-selling books, people just know his name. He's a big deal. But why? That's what we're going to try and unpack today. Where does this huge influence come from, and what does it actually look like out there in the world?
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And we've got some great material to work with. We've got a bunch of notes dated March 25th, 2025, and this really interesting piece from Christian Culture News, The Inspiring Journey of T.D. Jakes, a Pastor and Author Transforming Lives. So what we're going to do today is trace that journey, starting from his early life and then going all the way to the global stage. And of course, we'll also touch on some of those criticisms and controversies that have popped up along the way.
Okay, so let's start with the early stuff. Our sources paint a picture of a pretty formative childhood in South Charleston, West Virginia.
Yeah, really formative. Seems like growing up in a, relatively humble environment, it wasn't like a silver spoon situation. And that really shaped his worldview. The Christian Culture News article talks about his mom. She was super devout, went to church all the time, and just really instilled these core values in him, faith and resilience. You can kind of see how that groundwork would influence his whole trajectory, right? And then it wasn't just about personal beliefs. He saw firsthand the struggles people in his community were facing, and he saw how faith could be this source of strength in tough times. So he wasn't just dealing with these ideas in the abstract. They were very real and immediate for him. And get this, he started preaching at 16.
Wow, that's young.
Seriously young. Okay, fast forward a bit, and there's this pivotal moment when he relocates to Dallas, Texas. This move kind of sets the stage for the Potter's House, which, I mean, explodes in terms of growth.
Yeah, the numbers are kind of mind-blowing. Something like 30,000 people attending every week, a massive congregation. What do you think was the secret sauce? What drew so many people to the Potter's House and from such diverse backgrounds?
Well, founding it in 1996 as a non-denominational church, not tying it to any specific denomination, that probably made it more accessible to a wider group of people right from the start.
Makes sense.
But beyond that, his preaching style, but both our notes and the Christian Culture News article highlight this, it was different, dynamic, really connected with people on an emotional level, and he didn't shy away from real-world issues. Poverty, systemic injustices. He talked about these things from the pulpit. It wasn't just about spiritual guidance. It was about empowering people in their daily lives and addressing the challenges they were facing head on.
It was more holistic.
And that community engagement, it wasn't just some add-on. It was woven into the fabric of the Potter's House from the beginning.
So tell me about that. What did this community outreach actually look like in practice?
So they had the Potter's House Community Outreach Program, and it addressed the immediate needs, right? Providing food, clothing, shelter. But it went deeper than that. They offered emotional and spiritual support, really trying to lift people up in every aspect of their lives.
Yeah, I'm looking at the notes here, and what strikes me is the emphasis on education and professional development. They had mentorship programs, workshops, all these training sessions specifically geared towards helping people find success in the job market. It wasn't about handouts. It was about equipping people with the skills and resources to create a better future for themselves.
Absolutely. And he didn't just preach about social issues. He rolled up his sleeves and got involved, participating in dialogues about racial inequality, poverty, all these systemic issues. And he worked with leaders, policymakers, trying to affect change on a broader scale.
So from this foundation of local engagement, he really went global. And I mean, he's become a massive figure on the world stage. I'm looking at the sheer number of international speaking engagements listed here. Conferences, corporate events, spiritual gatherings, you name it. He's constantly traveling and sharing his perspective with huge audiences.
What's interesting to me is not just the travel itself, but the strategic collaborations. He's teamed up with other influential leaders from all walks of life, not just religious figures. These partnerships have definitely helped amplify his reach, bringing his message to new audiences and new corners of the world. And then you have the T.D. Jakes Foundation, which is actively working to support underprivileged communities globally, providing scholarships, resources, really putting his global vision into action.
It seems like he has this unique ability to connect with people from all different backgrounds. Our sources even talk about him bridging cultural and religious divides. How does he pull that off?
I think it goes back to those core themes we talked about earlier: hope, faith, resilience. These are universal human experiences that transcend specific cultural or religious boundaries. And he addresses these tough issues with this blend of, I don't know, compassion and wisdom. He kind of meets people where they are, acknowledges the complexities, and offers guidance without being judgmental. And let's not forget about his work as an author and filmmaker. His best-selling books, in particular, they have this power to spread his message far and wide, reaching people who may never have the opportunity to hear him speak in person.
Absolutely. Let's talk about those books. The Christian Culture News article highlights some key titles and their central themes.
Yeah, so you've got Can't Stop Now, which is all about perseverance and resilience in the face of adversity. It's not just about pushing through tough times, but about seeing setbacks as opportunities for growth, like stepping stones on the path to something bigger.
I like that.
Then there's Instinct, which encourages readers to identify and harness their unique talents, their inherent abilities, to become more effective leaders and create positive change in their own spheres of influence. And then you have Soar, which is all about breaking free from self-imposed limitations. It's about recognizing that we often have more potential than we realize, and that with faith and courage, we can achieve extraordinary things.
So, resilience, inherent abilities, overcoming limitations, these are pretty consistent themes in his work.
Yeah.
It's all about empowering people to live their best lives.
Exactly. And if you zoom out and look at the broader scope of his literary contributions, you'll see that they consistently center around personal growth, spiritual enrichment, and the principles of impactful leadership. He offers this integrated approach to self-improvement that blends the spiritual and the practical, providing guidance that's both insightful and actionable.
That's a good segue into his
Yeah.
teachings on leadership, right?
Right.
Because it's clear that his influence extends way beyond leading a congregation.
Yeah.
These principles seem applicable in all kinds of contexts, not just religious ones.
Absolutely. And he really stresses the importance of vision. Having that clear, compelling vision for the future, that's crucial for any leader, any team, no matter what field they're in. And then there's that theme of resilience again. He doesn't see challenges as roadblocks, but as opportunities for growth and learning. You got to be able to adapt, bounce back, use those experiences to make you stronger. And finally, he talks a lot about emotional intelligence, the ability to understand and empathize with others. It's not just about IQ, it's about EQ. Being able to connect with people on a deeper level, that's what creates a truly supportive and collaborative environment.
And it's worth noting that no discussion of T.D. Jakes would be complete without acknowledging the criticisms and controversies that have surrounded his work.
Yeah, for sure. We've got to talk about that.
Our notes and the Christian Culture News article both touch on this. One of the main points of contention seems to be his association with the prosperity gospel movement.
Right.
For those who might not be familiar, can you give us a quick rundown of what that is and what the criticisms are?
Sure. So the prosperity gospel is this belief that God rewards faithfulness with material blessings, things like financial wealth and good health. Critics argue that this focus on material prosperity can sometimes lead to unrealistic expectations, setting people up for disappointment if they don't achieve that level of wealth.
Right.
And there are concerns about potential exploitation, people giving money to the church with the expectation that it will somehow guarantee their own financial success. It gets a bit tricky.
And it's not just about theological interpretations, is it? There have also been questions about financial transparency within his ministry and the Platter's house itself.
Yeah, there have been calls for more transparency, how the money is being used, how decisions are being made. Some critics argue that the emphasis on financial growth within the ministry might be overshadowing other more important spiritual goals. It's important to acknowledge that Jakes has responded to these concerns, explaining that a large organization like the Potter's House, with all its ministries and outreach programs, has significant operational needs, like any big organization, and requires sound financial management to function effectively, right? It's kind of like running a big business in a way.
Okay.
And then there's the whole issue of his past affiliation with the Oneness Pentecostal movement.
Right.
This movement has some theological beliefs that differ from traditional Trinitarian doctrines, how they understand the nature of God. So his association with that movement has sparked a lot of theological debate and discussion. But to his credit, he hasn't shied away from these conversations. He's engaged with his critics and often advocates for a more nuanced understanding of different theological perspectives.
So we're dealing with a pretty complex figure here, right?
Right.
He's undeniably influential, has
Yeah.
touched countless lives,
Yeah.
but he's also generated his share of controversy. It's important for our listeners to be aware of all these different facets as they form their own opinions.
Totally agree. It's not about taking sides, it's about understanding the whole picture.
Absolutely. So, to recap, We've covered a lot of ground today. We talked about how T.D. Jakes' childhood experiences in West Virginia really shaped his core message of hope, faith, and resilience.
Right.
We explored the incredible growth of the Potter's House and its evolution into this powerhouse of community engagement, offering not just spiritual guidance, but practical support, addressing social issues, and empowering people to create a better future for themselves.
Yeah.
We delved into his global reach, his ability to bridge cultural and religious divides, his influence as an author and speaker, his leadership principles that resonate far beyond the walls of the church. And of course, we didn't shy away from the criticisms, the questions about the prosperity gospel, the financial transparency issues, the theological debates. It's all part of the story.
It's a multifaceted legacy for sure.
Exactly. So I'm going to leave you, the listener, with this thought. We've given you a glimpse into the world of T.D. Jakes, his journey, his impact, the controversies, the whole nine yards. Now it's up to you to decide what resonates with you, what challenges you, what inspires you, what aspect of his influence do you find most compelling? What's worth exploring further on your own? Think about it.
That's a great question. I'll be thinking about it too.